0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. It was on Monday last when I first read out the statement from an Comisión Laerinke Gaeilge that they gave to us after we raised a number of queries which have been raised with us by listeners. And I said it yesterday as well. I was, my jaw dropped when I read the statement, because the CLRG, their world headquarters are in Dublin, by the way. Obviously, they've 2,200 registered teachers. That's schools. And they have branches all across Ireland, the UK, Europe, New Zealand, South Africa, Canada, the United States, massive in the States, and I mentioned New Zealand, Australia, right across the world. And they're probably the biggest, they're a private company, the biggest organisation of Irish dancing competitions. And but the statement, and I read out the paragraphs that jumped out at me. We have received allegations with supporting documentation of several grievous breaches of our code of conduct. Such unethical behaviour cannot and will not be tolerated. The evidence apparently dates back several years and identifies individually allegedly offering various inducements to promote dancers to a higher than deserved placing at particular competitions. That's fixing. As I said, fetch fixing on Monday. It is believed that there are a number of teachers and schools implicated in the allegations. Due to the possible far-reaching extent of such allegations, and to ensure fairness, transparency and thoroughness, the service of an independent former judge of the Court of Appeal, we asked for the name of the judge on Monday, but that hasn't been forthcoming, has been engaged to oversee and supervise the immediate investigation into these matters. They'll have full and open access to the resources and records of CLRG. The process will be difficult and arduous, but this grossly unethical behaviour must be eliminated from our dance genre. So, inter alia, in that statement there, that sentence, they're saying there is grossly unethical behaviour because it must be eliminated from our dance genre. Now, Leila Healy has contacted us. Leila has been dancing since she was four, world champion on one occasion, and then previously she'd come second, 13, 7, 6, 3rd, 2nd. And eventually, I think it was in 2013, you were declared world champion, Leila.
Yeah, that's correct. I won the world in 2013 in Boston.
Well done. And what's your reaction to this news?
To be honest, I'm not shocked. I am aware of, like, if, you know, carrying on throughout the years. As you said, I started dancing at the age of four. And obviously when you're younger like that, you don't really understand. It's only when you have a goal and you're working hard towards something and you're seeing, you know, results that you deserve that you're not getting, and, you know, hearing things that you just know it. Like, favours is a big, big word that's thrown around the place in the Irish dancing world.
Favours?
Favours, yeah.
What does that mean?
You know, just you could have, you know, in Irish dancing there's hundreds of competitions.
Yeah.
You'd have, you know, a good few majors. You know, we'd have little competitions every single weekend, where, you know, we travel, you know, whether it be in Ireland, the UK, and then you'd have the major ones, which would be, you know, your regionals, your nationals, the All-Irelands, the Worlds, Great Britain's, etc. So in terms of favours, you know, you'd get one. You know, you could have, like, as you said, there's thousands of registered teachers and judges, so you could have one judge that would be maybe judging the regional, say, and another then that is judging the world, and you know, they could get in contact with each other and say, well, listen, I'll give you, you know, said place if you bump my dancer up in this competition. So in that way, favours is a big, big thing in the Irish dancing world.
And do judges and teachers, you know, when you're at a competition, Leila, be it here or abroad, well, abroad it'd be obviously be in a hotel or whatever, but do judges and dance teachers, do they mingle socially when these competitions are ongoing? Do you follow me?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean...
But I'm just thinking of, say, an amateur dramatic competition where the judges don't go near any of the contestants. They don't want to.
Oh, no. And it wouldn't necessarily, like, you're not saying, like, the competitors are going out and, you know, maybe partying with the adjudicators. It may be, like, teachers of schools that are friends with adjudicators that are just perhaps, like, are judging on that said day. And that's how, you know, favours are passed along then, and, you know.
Well, would it be as innocent as, say, a judge saying to a teacher, like, you have four brilliant dancers in the competition. I've got to pick one of them. You know them better than I do. Who do you think they're four? I don't know how you judge an Irish dancing competition, but they're four of incredible ability. Which one should I go for? Is that innocent?
That's the way it should be. You know, how you dance on the day, and that's, you know, like anything, it's like a school exam. A test is how you're graded. It's not, you know, how you've been throughout the whole year. Now, obviously, a hard-working dancer, you can tell when they're on stage, the determination, you know, how much they want it, their attitude towards it. You have to do so many sacrifices. It's such a disciplined sport. Like, when I was growing up, like, when I stopped competing at the age of 20, before I was 20, but there were sacrifices that I couldn't, you know, go out to, you know, my friend's 18th or things like that, because I had a goal, and that's the goal that I wanted to do. I wanted to win the world, and no one was going to stop me, and I was doing it on my own back. And it's hard. You see people like that on stage have a genuine talent. You can see that they're hardworking, and that's the person that you want to give it to at the end of the day, along with, obviously, the, you know, how they perform on the day. But it's so disheartening to see someone that has that goal, and, like, they're literally shattered, like, when they realise that, you know, it's not possible because these things are going on.
So are you saying that the judging process now, the whole adjudication process in the CLRG competitions is tainted at the minute, is not as trustworthy as it should be?
No, it's definitely not as trustworthy as it should be. I mean,
so then why proceed? Isn't there a number of provincial competitions going on in the next few weeks leading up to the world finals in wherever they're held this year, the States or whatever? Like, can people compete? Can dancers compete in CLRG competitions in the next 2 or 3 months? While this shadow hangs over the adjudicating process.
Personally, it's kind of a 50-50 in the way I think of it. You know, you have to kind of think of the kids that are going out there
absolutely.
Who are working on their sport. For me, I had a routine when I was younger. You know, I went to dance class during the week. I had a competition on Saturday, Sunday. You know, Mum could drive me to Belfast and then get in the car and head straight back down to Cork for a competition the next day. Like, that, friendships come with it. You know, you have dance
families. Yeah, of course,
You know, but in a way, then, no, they shouldn't continue on, because the kids deserve to get the result that they deserve.
So you think they should be? They've appointed a judge. They say, well, they've told us that on Monday. They've appointed a judge to examine. Do you think they should wait for the outcome of that judge's report before they proceed?
I think so, because whoever these people are, there's probably a number of them. I don't know the names. I don't know. I just know that it's going on, you know. Like, whoever these people are, who's to say that, you know, they go to a said competition next week and this has been discussed again, or, you know, they go to a major and it should just be put on a halt until the whole thing is completely sorted, because you'll have people talking, you'll have information being spread, you'll have rumours here, rumours there, and the outcome, you won't get the proper outcome that CLRG and, all the dancers and bodies within CLRG deserve.
But as you say, the other side is the young dancers who, even you've explained it there, you gave up so much. It became your life.
And especially with COVID, like, you know, it was put on hold for, like, what, 2.5 years?
Oh, of course.
They're only getting back into it. So in a way, it's really disheartening on the dancers as it is, but for them to, you know, not see their friends, they might be the only friends they have. They mightn't have friends in school. You know, they see these people more than they actually see their families, really, because they spend so much time dancing. I mean, when I was dancing, it was about 15 hours a week that I'd be, like, in a studio dancing.
Wow.
And then weekends away from you know, my dad and my sister at home, I wouldn't get to see them. So, you know, it is a big deal, and part of your life.
And it's a real dilemma now what to do. But as we heard over the last few days, a lot of people are fed up with the cost of it now. The designer dresses, $2,000 or $3,000. The fake tan, the makeup. Everyone has to go to the same makeup artist or whatever. The contours on the legs, the binding of the feet, the wigs, the double wigs. I mean, when did it start going down that road, the Barbie road?
I remember my mom always saying when I was growing up and when I started dancing, no, she'll never wear a wig, she'll never wear, you know, the makeup and stuff like that. I suppose it's just when, I know it's terrible to say, and you shouldn't be like that in today's society, because you don't want kids to follow other kids, you know, be it media or whatever, but when one person is doing it and they get the results, and, you know, a school brings out a trend, other schools want to follow. And I suppose that's how, you know, you've gone down the route of not the traditional dresses without sparkles. But now, like, there's diamantes, there's pearls, there's everything on costume. It's not just a little traditional Celtic design that you would have had many years ago.
Yesterday we heard some costumes costing between €3,000 and €6,000.
Yeah. No, it is. It's very, very expensive. It's such an expensive sport. And, you know, that's without, like, the likes of travelling, say, if the world, when I won the world, it was in Boston. Like, that was a big expense itself. You know, getting to America, being there for a week, hotel, flights, you know, keeping yourself over there. Getting a new costume, I would have gotten a new costume before, you know, either the All-Ireland or the World.
Yeah.
So that was once a year. And then you're paying your fees to go to class, your competitions on every other weekend, you know, local fashion. It builds up, like.
It sure does. By the way, when you said in Boston, your hotel and all this carry on, if you get to the final, which you did and you won the final, you got to the final on a number of occasions, the world final, 13-7-6, third, second, and then number one. By the way, were you number one the following year? Did you hold on to it?
No, I was fourth.
Okay. But
I tried.
Did you have to pay your own hotel bill?
Yeah. Of course, yeah. Everything.
And did all the teachers and the adjudicators stay in the same hotel?
So when the world, you know, you get the date, it's usually around Easter week. Wherever it is, they release like block hotels to facilitate everyone. So you could have three hotels and they'd be staying between the three.
But would adjudicators and teachers and contestants, I'm thinking of teachers primarily at this stage, they're all adults, are they allowed to stay in the same hotel?
Yeah, there's no rule against it. Yeah, they can go down to the bar, mingle with each other, and
Well, that's normal, say before
a big competition would start, say it was to start on tomorrow, they could, you know, fly out today and meet everyone, and, you know, and that's kind of where it all
so
starts.
So, Leila, if you were still competing, would you compete in the next few weeks before this is sorted out?
Absolutely not. Probably would have called it a day. Definitely would have.
Okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, what was it like for you when you did retire? Given this was your life.
Very difficult. I'd say you've probably heard, you know, just from being a broadcaster or whatever, you know, you've probably interviewed athletes and stuff in your time.
Yeah.
It's very, very tough.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, it's a disciplined sport. You know, I had started from the age of 4. So it was my life until the age of 20 when I stopped competing. But when I was 20, I went on the tour, like, with the with troops around the world. So I didn't actually physically stop dancing altogether until I was about 23. But it's very difficult. You know, I was... I suffered with anxiety, depression. You know, I was stuck in a rut. I didn't know who I was, where I wanted to be, what I could do.
But is there any help afterwards? Because it is a pretty wealthy organisation, the CLRG.
No, not at all.
Do they say, you know, like, this is a common phenomenon? Surely people know that if you're given your life for 16 years, your young life, to the hobby, the skill, the profession of Irish dancing, and you're keeping Irish dancing alive, and probably Riverdance did more than any organisation ever will. But the organisations were always there, in fairness to them, in tough times and good times. But surely they know at the end of that that people like yourself will get an enormous downer.
Yeah. You would expect it, but nothing like that. You know, I had to, you know, went to counselling and stuff like that, but that was after many days of just staying in a bed, didn't know what I wanted to do, I wasn't even getting fresh air. I just didn't know what to do with my life.
And yeah.
It's very tough because, like, but it, with footballers, like that.
Do CLRG run aftercare? Do you follow me?
No, if not at
welfare,
all.
And I looked at all, looking at it since Monday there, all the different, so I know they have an ethics committee, but they don't, I couldn't find a welfare committee that would look after.
Once you're gone, you know, you're kind of gone and that's that.
Leila, the CLRG Leinster Championship runs from the 10th to the 13th November in Blanchardstown. Should this be cancelled? Or postponed, even?
I'd say right now postponed more so than cancelled. Like I said to you previously, obviously it's going to be hard on the kids and all that are competing. But at the end of the day, it's a regional. That's what gets us to the world, to the big competition. And, you know, you could say maybe like, you know, local fashion and maybe, you know, yeah, whatever, you can have to go ahead. But it's technically a major for us. You know, each region, like Leinster, Munster, Ulster and Connacht would have their own qualifiers around the same time. And, you know, it's a given that obviously if you're a teacher in Leinster, you can't, or adjudicator in Leinster, you can't judge the Leinsters. To judge somewhere else. So in that case, definitely they should be postponed because like that, there's going to be talks. It's still going to be fresh in the air. I mean, it's only next month. And like the world is such a big, big deal for kids. It's the one dream, whether it's to recall, as in like, you know, get to the final round, whether it's to medal, whether it's supposed to get there. Like, it's a massive, massive thing. Every dancer has a completely different goal. And I think right now it definitely should be postponed.
Okay. And what would you, insofar as anyone can predict, what this judge who's engaged in this inquiry, what would you like to see come out of it?
To be able to trust the CLRG organisation, and for it to go back to how it was before. I mean, when I first started out, you know, it was as I was getting older and as the organisation grew bigger and bigger and bigger, you could see these things developing more and more and more. It's very, very political, and it's just, you want it to go back to its old days. You know, it's our tradition. It's our national dance. We should be go out there, enjoy it again.
I was baffled that there's no government or departmental representation on any of the CLRG groups. That they're completely independent of the state, obviously.
Yeah.
That the state has no role in. Now they would argue that the CLRG are competitive. Is that what they would say? That they just run competitions and they get sponsorship and there's obviously with dresses at $3,000 and $6,000 and all, everything that goes along with it. It's a big, big business. Anyway, stay there for a sec if you could, Leila. Fraser Fallon has also contacted us. And Fraser, what's your interest in this issue that's arisen since Monday?
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm just the head of media for the World Irish Dance Association. And I was really listening to the show yesterday and I was just trying to give across the point that not every aspect of Irish dancing is about the glitz and the glam and the, as you say, the Barbie lifestyle out there.
My daughter will kill me for using that phrase. I don't mean that about the young people. They're fantastic. Their commitment. You heard Leila there, and you know the commitment is just. I'm just thinking of the whole beauty pageant image.
Yeah,
that was just a telegraphic. You probably shouldn't use that phrase, but just the beauty pageant. Where did that come from?
I believe it really stemmed at the late 90s. It started creeping into Irish dancing. So as a bit of background, I started dancing in 1996. And you could see through the years in CLRG, because that's where I used to dance, you could see the wigs and the fake tan and the beauty kind of coming through. And as well, I kind of suggested that it was, you saw the people that were winning and people were trying to emulate that onto themselves. And they saw the fake tan, they saw the wig, they saw the expensive dresses, and then it just became a trend that it just came through. And especially with social media becoming so prominent now as well, then it's just promoting that even further, where people believe that they need to have the dress, they need to have the wig, they need to have the fake tan to even stand a chance at getting at one of the top positions.
And how long did you dance in CLRG competitions?
I danced for 16 years in CLRG, and then I moved on elsewhere.
And what was the atmosphere when you were dancing? Was there any allegations of fesh fixing?
I think it's very similar to what Leila said there. I think it would echo pretty much everything she said. She's outlined it very well. Where it was known that favours were happening between schools, but no one really had any evidence of that. So I think right now, seeing things that are coming out, it's kind of vindicating what actually was thought to be happening. It turns out to actually be true.
But have you been at a CLRG competition where the judges don't have anything to do with the teachers or the dancers until the day of the performance?
The only one that I can really call back on, there was a World Championships, I believe it was the first one in America. I believe it was 2009 in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Now, that one was very unique to the other World Championships that happened with TRG, because it was almost like the judges didn't know any of the dancers. Mm-hmm. It was a very unique perspective, because I think they were trying to utilise more of the judges that were in America that hadn't seen so many dancers from this side of the pond.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it was before social media was so big that they wouldn't have seen someone dancing on Instagram or TikTok or anything like that. So not knowing any of the dancers really kind of shone through in the results. And a lot of people kind of found out where their true place was that year.
You thought that was fairer?
I certainly did.
Surely it should be a given in any organisation that a judge, be it on the bench of the High Court, if a judge on the bench of the High Court and the defendant comes up before them and he or she realises they know them, they immediately have to resile from the case. If a judge in a flower show sees one of their neighbours, they'd have to declare that. Like, why is it that in the Irish dancing competitions, judges and teachers are allowed to freely mix? That they do, obviously, they're adults. They do know each other before the competition. Surely that's wrong.
Completely agree in certain organisations, but that isn't prevalent in many other ones. Now, I'm obviously only speaking for like the World Irish Dance Association, but there are many other open platform organisations that do promote similar values to us, in that there are certain association rules that if you know someone and that you've danced for someone in a previous years, or you've done a workshop for a school or anything like that, and you have an association to a person mm-hmm. that is on the stage, you're unequivocally not allowed to judge them. That is something that is like in other organisations. And I think that's something that maybe CLRG maybe need to crack in on.
And are you a competitive organisation, the CLRG?
I suppose, yes, we are competitors, but we don't compete like for like. Our core value and belief is really trying to promote a cost-effective, no beauty pageant, traditional aspect. Like, we try and promote, you don't need to wear this £3,000-£6,000 dress. Yeah. We recently had someone, they were wearing a 20 euro outfit out of pennies. They got a black skirt and they got a black top. They won. And now they're seeing dancers like that win at competitions, that they're now thinking, well, actually, I don't need the 3,000 euro dress. I can actually just go down to pennies, get myself a skirt and a top, and let my dancing do the talking. And I think that should be across all organisations, that it's all about the dancing. It shouldn't be about a wig. It shouldn't be about what dress you've got on, what shoes you have. It should be about the dancing, because there's such a financial cost in it that it's a shame to all these dancers and parents and teachers that are putting in all of this effort and money into an organisation that seems to promote fixing.
I presume then it's easier for boys, is it, to be treated fairly if you don't have to spend all this money?
I mean, that was certainly the thing. I didn't have to deal with the wig or the fake tan or anything like that. It was really a pair of trousers, a shirt and a waistcoat. Even the prices for a designer waistcoat and shirt are not anywhere close to the cost that the girls need to pay for.
Okay, many dance CLRG commission, which, well, that's, people think it's a state organisation, but in fairness to the state, it isn't. So the judge wasn't appointed by Catherine Martin, the minister. The judge was appointed by CLRG because it's a private organisation and they're entitled to do that. CLRG say we've 2,200 affiliated teachers. I presume that's up to 2,000 schools, so. How many would you have in the World Irish Dance Association?
We're just over 200, and we're spread across about 30 countries right now. We are expanding quite a lot in developing regions as well.
When were you set up, Fraser?
It was set up in the early 2000s.
Why? Was it a breakaway group?
It wasn't really a breakaway group. More that a lot of people around, like, it wasn't like everyone broke away from CLRG into this other organisation. It was a collective of dance teachers that really knew about a lot of these allegations that are being made right now, and really wanted something different. They wanted something with a more traditional aspect. They wanted something that wasn't about the glitz and the glam. So they came together and created the World Irish Dance Association.
How are you funded, Fraser?
We were funded via competitions that we run.
Okay.
So it's not like we're funded by certain governments and have the support of ministers. It is really, we try and run events that turn a profit that can then be put back into the organisation to help run our biggest championship, which is our world and international championships. So that is what we try and reinvest for each and every year to put it back in there.
But is it not fair to say also it's very hard to judge Irish dancing, so it's not an exact science? You know what I mean? It's not like boxing where someone's knocked out. That's the answer to that. They can't win the match. But Irish dancing.
Yeah, it's very subjective. Similar to, I believe, like gymnastics, where you do have a panel of judges that do need to score based on what they are.
I'm told, Arlene was saying, it is very technical as well. It is very skillful.
Exactly.
But there is a grey area, I presume, where.
Exactly, and that's why we do have like technical guidance for the judges in our organisation, where we do promote the top aspects of Irish dancing. So we believe that the main focus is what we call timing, turnout and cross feet. Every judge within our organisation should be judging in accordance to that. So there shouldn't be as varied a result.
Are you a judge, Fraser?
I am, yes. I have been a judge for the past 5 years.
And have you ruled in your organisation about judges and teachers mixing?
What we do is we make sure that the judges, when they're at a competition, are trying to keep separate away from anyone else in the hall, whether it be teachers, dancers, or anything like that.
Are judges allowed to socialise with teachers?
Not at the event, no. They're almost like chaperones to their hotel for a meal, and then chaperoned like back to their like hotel. That's really
how it is. You're saying it is quite strict.
Yeah. I mean, we're not unique in that. A lot of other organisations do that as well. A lot of open platform organisations.
Well, in your experience of, well, in your 16 years experience of CLRG, did they do that? Did they have strict rules about judges and teachers not mixing or not meeting?
At that time, I probably wouldn't know. The organisation when I was 19.
We asked someone from CLRG to come on as far back as last Monday, but they said as long as this investigation is ongoing, they won't be saying anything. Well, maybe they will now that it's, that the story has taken off. Breege, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And when you're listening, go ahead with your contribution. Yeah, you did compete.
I did compete in affairs many years ago.
And
I'm a very mature student right now.
You were a teacher.
I was, and I taught white Bermudians in Bermuda, and I also taught set dancing in Ireland.
And is there favouritism?
Listen, Joe, I know women who nearly pull the hair up one another's heads. I know mothers who haven't spoken for a lifetime. And I can tell you, I didn't travel very far to see that quite around us. Terrible.
And how did that come about, the competition?
I think it's all to do with, favouritism, I guess, and not being able to accept defeat. And when we competed in a Fez, Joe, we were good dancers. And I remember the two that won the medals. One was the teacher's daughter and the other lived in a very big house. But that was enough for us. And even though I was only 12, Joe, I remember it wasn't a good decision or a right decision. But anyway, we went on to secondary school and that was it. We still had a bit of dancing. I love Irish culture, Irish dancing. It's about who we are and what we are and what we took from the past as well. And I've travelled to New York and America and lived there. And I've seen this artificiality of headgear, makeup. It's huge. It's a huge spin-up. I mean, business. Huge economics around it, Joe.
Oh, is there? Yeah.
Apart from the appreciation of this is Irish. Okay?
So do you think the judging process now and the CLRG is tainted?
Well, I don't know, but that was my experience from a young age. That there's always, I wouldn't know anything about that organisation. I know it's there. I know it exists. I don't know about their policies and procedures.
Yeah, okay. They have an ethics committee and every organisation has to anyway. They have childcare policies.
Yeah.
That's obligatory anyway.
Yeah, but Joe, this business is a big business. When you go to a big venue in New York and you see the few thousand competitors and the cost of putting one of them on the stage, never mind all the mileage they put up and the money and the coaching and the one-to-one, that's a huge industry in itself.
And what you said you saw mothers tearing the hair out of each other.
Why? Because theirs didn't get first and the other got second and mine was better than yours. And that is very true. I'm not the only one that would tell you that today. Yeah, I've seen it. It's sad. It's very sad. It's all part of it.
Okay, but do you think you ever saw somebody win competitions that shouldn't have won them?
I did. Indeed.
Okay.
Certainly.
Okay, stay with us back after this break. Joe at rte.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818-715-815. Talk to Joe on 0818-715-815.
Emma's contacted us about the fesh fixing and you're saying, Emma, that you're a competitive Irish dancer in Australia and this has been going on for years.
Yeah, it has. Back when I was competing a couple of years ago, I was lucky enough to go to the World Championships and sort of see what it was like.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was very sort of, as much sort of political as it was, you know, about the dancing, which is so unfortunate because for someone like me who had to work really hard and train and, pay to go over there, you know, it was just unfortunate that that was happening and still is happening today.
And what about this? Fraser says it came in the early 2000s. The wigs, the dresses, the makeup, the fake tan, the pumps, the binding of the feet, the binding of the legs. It goes on and on and on. When did that emerge?
Yeah, well, that sort of just come about when I was actually quite young when that came about because I was in the very early stages. Like, I was four when I started and I did have the kind of ring curls that we all wore to bed when we were younger, but then the wigs came in. And then as the years kind of progressed, the dress designs became more elaborate and more expensive.
Yeah.
And then sometimes as then the years went on, they became almost sort of identifiers as different dress designers, as favorite, famous dress designers. And so, you know, if you had a certain dress designer you were wearing at the World Championships, people would sort of be like, oh, that's a very famous dress designer. And so it all sort of became really about the sort of glitz and glamour and the look of the dancer that was the most important. Mm. It kind of shot ahead of the dancing, which, again, is just unfortunate because, you know, girls and boys train for many, many hours, for many days a week, for years to try and get there. And if their look isn't up to scratch, then they're either missed or not given a chance. And, yeah, so it's just shocking, yeah.
It is spectacular to watch. It is beautiful to watch a beautiful dancer, male or female. But, Emma, how can you prove that there were favours? How can you ever prove that someone won a competition who should not have won it?
Well, it comes down to if you're watching the competitors dance and you see their skill set and you see, and everything's taken into account from their look, their choreography, the way they execute their movements, their technique.
Yeah.
And often at times you might see a dancer who is quite renowned and who normally is known for winning quite a few years in a row, who might not have a good day, who might not be dancing their best, and then someone else you know is definitely dancing either better or should. But then because I suppose sometimes, you know, with favouritism and judges sometimes not wanting to risk their reputation or their friendship, sometimes more often than not it'll go to the girl or boy who is more known for winning. Even though everybody in the audience would think that wasn't the right decision. And it's happened to me when I was competing as well, when I was younger and, you know, I knew I would have had a good day and might have done better. Mm. But, you know, there was a few girls in my section who had a reputation for doing a lot better, and so it just never sort of went my way in that sense. You know, and it's heartbreaking. It really is heartbreaking to the teachers and the parents and the dancers themselves. And
I know you're, Fraser, everyone's quite young when you're competing, but as far as you remember, or if you know, could the judges and the dance teachers, socialise together?
Yeah, they do. Absolutely. It's a very big social circle. And it all, you know, happens sort of within the events of the competition and at other sessions as well outside the World Championships. And it's just, all of this is sort of, it's really mad to talk about because I'm actually going to be doing a play in a couple of weeks' time about the Irish dancing world and about my experience when I was travelling from Australia to Ireland to compete. So it's just sort of pure coincidence that this has all sort of come out now.
And what's the sting of your play without giving without any spoilers? Is the sting of play that there is fesh fixing?
In a way, so not so much in that sort of intense regard, but more about how certain schools don maybe a certain look or an identifier that judges would recognise as they dance for a certain school, and then so they would mark them higher normally. So I sort of put that sort of element in the play and about how... Mm.
But do you think, they've admitted themselves in this statement they gave us on Monday, do you think the adjudication process... Obviously, the vast majority of judges are absolutely ethical and fine. But given the CLRG statement, which I'll say I read out on Monday, given that statement, do you think the adjudication process is tainted?
In a way, I think yes. I think it definitely needs to be improved or even monitored more heavily. You know what I mean? I've known a lot of judges. You know, my old dance teacher was a judge, and she was always ethical and always fair and... You know, but I think there needs to be an improvement in monitoring judges and their scoring, and maybe even a separate panel of judges watching to make sure that, you know, the judges are being fair is what I would love to see. And
can you appeal? Emma, insofar anyone can come in at this, Fraser or Breed or Leila, if you come second in a competition, can you appeal and say? Is there a? I don't mean VAR. I don't mean someone else watching the video. But if the, Leila, the judge's decision is final, isn't it? I'm correct there, am I?
Pretty much. Yeah.
There's no.
But in a sense,
you can't appeal.
But if there was a mistake in certain results or counting, they would have to sometimes redo the competition.
To
make sure that it's done again fairly. But if you're second and, you know, you think that's unfair, well, sort of, it's tough luck, really. You just sort of have to I talk about, you know, wouldn't it be great if all dancers could just go back to wearing black skirts and black tops and be completely sort of anonymous and it was just
Why does it have to be competitive?
Well, I suppose, like, with any sport, it's always, you know, exciting. And I think it motivates young
kids. But
is it
a sport or a pastime or a hobby? Or
It's definitely a sport. Irish dancing can be seen as some sort of, you know,
But when Irish, like when GAA football started, or hurling, or camogie, or hockey, or soccer, they did start as competitive codes. But Irish dancing did not start as a competitive code. It started as an entertainment for people locally and a cheap form of skillful entertainment and enjoyable entertainment. It didn't start as a competition.
I know, but I mean, if you were to see the kind of level of dance and athleticism that is involved in Irish dancing, it's just something out of this world. And it's very different to, say, the sort of entertainment side of it, where you have the likes of Riverdance or Lord of the Dance. Yeah. You know, it's a completely different world. And, you know, something that shows the uniqueness of an individual dancer rather than a group of dancers dancing the same thing on stage.
But did Riverdance not prove that it's the group dancing that put the hairs on the back of your neck?
Yeah, and like, more than it does, and there are team competitions there. But it's just as thrilling to see sort of individual choreography as well, and to see how it's executed and how everyone adopts their own style, you know. And, you know, because the same can be said for GAA and Camogie. Like, each individual player has their own unique skills they might be known for. Yeah. And isn't it thrilling to watch them execute those skills in that group setting? And the same can be said about Irish dancing.
And just finally, Leila Healy was world champion with the CLRG a few short years ago. Leila, you can never prove fesh fixing. You can never prove it, can you?
No, unfortunately not. You know, it's just hearsay, she said, and it's such a shame because, you know, when the organisation is so big that, you know, you would, like, you just knew you wouldn't go up and say, oh, listen, this is going on, because you'd probably laugh at. They'd say, oh, you know, yeah, we'll sort it
sour
out.
Grapes,
brush it off, you know. So, no, there isn't a way of proving it. But the only way that we can prove it is now, obviously, people are coming out and saying what they've seen. And, you know, the evidence that is lying there, which, you know, that has come out in the paper and on the radio and stuff like that. It's a start. I mean,
well, some of the stuff that's come out, and we've had it since Monday, we just couldn't repeat.
No, I've seen the articles. You know, it's disgusting. It's upsetting. It's actually
it's
really
on social media. I know that now. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's very. It makes you angry. It makes you really, really frustrated. You know, you spend so much time of your life, and all I can say is, like, for what is it, a fraud? Like, did I win that title? Like, I know I won my title fair and square, you know. My dancing teachers, you know, weren't adjudicators at the time. And now I know one of them has gone on and is an adjudicator. But at the time when I was competing, neither of them, you know. So I know I won myself fair and square. You know, I climbed the ranks every year. And, you know, I had many titles to retain. And I didn't retain. There was one that I didn't retain, and I knew I wasn't going to get that title back.
Okay. Mary McGuire before the break. Mary.
Hi, Joe.
You were in the World Dancing Championship. Well, was it the CLRG competitions you were in?
It was indeed.
Okay. And what do you think of these serious allegations which have emerged all week? And as I say, the statement from the CLRG, which is jaw-dropping, as I said, on Monday, to talk about allegedly offering fairies inducements to promote dancers to what they don't say what the inducements are, to a higher than deserved placing at particular competitions. This grossly unethical behaviour must be eliminated from our dance genre. Is the adjudication process in the CLRG now tainted?
Well, my experience was many years ago, and that's what I wanted to highlight. This is nothing new. This has been going on for over 30 years ago. It was happening, and I was in the World Championships, and I was recalled to come back, and I was out practicing to go back up and dance again. So basically, you may have 100 dancers, and then they'll recall so many. So maybe the top 20 will be recalled.
And you're a number. You're a number, are you, Mary?
You're a number. Yes. Okay. And you have a number on your on your waist. And I was out practicing to go up and back into, say, the top 20 to be recalled. And the judge who was going to judge the recall was outside. Didn't see me practicing around the corner.
Okay.
And asked his friend who was a dancing teacher, whose dancers were also recalled, he asked for their numbers and wrote them down on the back of an envelope and put them in his pocket, and off he went up to judge the competition.
Well, what was your understanding of him taking those numbers down?
Obviously, it was a friend's dancing school, so he was going to place them higher than those of us who were trying our best, but who weren't or whose dancing teachers weren't friends of of his. And it was very difficult to get back up and dance, knowing that that had just happened, and very upsetting. And I thought about saying something at the time, but I thought, well, I'm going up to compete. I've practiced for years to get to this stage, and I want to do well. And if I go and say something, they probably won't believe me anyway. And so it'll only harm me, and all my hard work will be...
And how did you do? How did you do that day?
I did well, but I felt I should have done better. And those dancers who belonged.
Do you think one of the numbers on the back of the envelope won?
Oh, several of the numbers on the back of the envelope did very high. Were placed very highly.
Higher than you.
And maybe one or two were correct, but certainly one or two weren't. So it's going on that length of time. It's of no surprise.
And now we've social media. You don't have to write on the back of an envelope. You can get a text saying, my dancers are 4'11", 17 and 62.
Absolutely. And it doesn't surprise me.
But now that it's come to a head with this statement from the Commission, saying grossly unethical behaviour must be eliminated. Is the judging, there's the Munster and Leinster, I think, are on in a few weeks, the World Championship qualifiers. Is the adjudication process tainted until we get this report from this judge?
It's absolutely tainted, and it's rotten at its core. They have to do... They really have to, make the changes, like that gentleman earlier was speaking about, like they did in America, where people were judging who didn't know the dancers and who didn't know the dancing teachers, and huge changes required. It's not going to take...
And I presume you'd be penalised or disqualified if you had contact with a judge where you were handing over your numbers, so to speak.
Well, that's what should be,
that's what should be
happening, but... It's a huge change that has to take place to make it fair. And I knew all along, in all the years I danced for about 20 years, and I knew it was very unfair and what was going on. But I loved it, and that's what kept me going. It's very, very unfair. So it'll take them a lot of work to put in place the steps that need to be put in place to fix it.
Okay, Mary Maguire, thanks indeed. Leila Healy, Fraser Fallon, Emma, and indeed Breach. Thank you all. 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.